This is Scott Roche, and I just wanted to add this header audio to let you know that what you're about to listen to is the pitch workshop from BaltCon 45. It was led by Jared Axelrod and had myself, Brent Weischel, and webcomic artist as the panelists. I think it was a great panel, and I hope you enjoy it.
And I'm going to pitch it a bunch of different ways, and we're going to talk about why some of them are better than the others. So the first pitch, and this is a style I hear a lot, this is a pitch workshop, and it's going to be great. Not effective, is it? But that is the first element that's important in pitch, and that is... There we go. That's what... I know. Yeah, that is awful. The dry erase board may be a bad idea. All right. So that was a what pitch. And that was that this is a pitch workshop that is what. I'm going to try it again here. All right. My name is Jared Axelrod. And this is a pitch workshop. And it's going to be great. That's got a who and a what. But... still not so great. So, here's the third one. My name is Jared Axelrod. This is a pitch workshop. I have done 3 successful pitches to larger publishers as a writer. That's why I'm here. We also have Scott Roche, who is an editor, receives pitches. We have Brent Weischel, who is a filmmaker, who has done several pitches himself. And we have Eric Kimball, who is a writer, and believes in the pitch method for his projects.
I work primarily on the web, so.
And that has a lot of information to it, but that's still not a very effective pitch. But that's a very common one. I believe that everyone here, when we are done, is going to have a really good pitch that they can take to anyone and succeed with. I believe this because I'm Jared Axelrod. I have done, using this method, 3 successful pitches to larger publishers. We have, with me, Scott Roche, who's an editor, Mary Weischel, who's a filmmaker, and Eric Kimball, who's a writer, all of which have a lot of experience with these and can tell you what's going to be good. Welcome to the Pitch Workshop. Now, that was more effective. And the reason that was more effective, and I'm going to try to write this on the board because this is important, I'm going to take my time with it. Is that when you are crafting your pitch, besides the introduction, which is very important, you need 3 things. And that is why and how and what. Most people will tell you that the most important thing you need is what. And what is really not that important. Because what, in a fiction sense, is your genre. In a larger sense, is your medium. You're doing a film. You're doing a science fiction story. This doesn't really mean anything, because it doesn't say anything about what yours is special. Why someone should pick your film, your science fiction story, your project above someone else's. It's generic. No one is interested in a vampire story. They might be interested in your vampire story, but they can just read Bram Stoker's if they wanted a vampire story. The next element is how, and that's your process, what you're going to take this your plot of your vampire story, your technique with your film. These are the elements that you're going to use. Now, these are important, no doubt, just like our credentials as editors and filmmakers and writers are important to this pitch panel, but that doesn't mean that, but that's not as important as why. Because when it comes down to, this is what's going to stick in people's heads. And this is the most important, because why is what you believe. It is your theme of your story. It is the reason you are making your film. It is the impetus, the personal element that is going to propel you forward on your project. To make an example, a why pitch for a story might go something like this. Like, the first love you ever have is way scarier than any monster story. That element is very frightening, personally. And I'm going to show that by having a young girl who is cut off from her support system and falls in love with a dangerous boy. That's the half. Now the boy is a vampire. And that's the what. And it becomes a vampire story afterwards. But the important parts, the why and the how, are what stick with people's heads. And I had this experience, and I love that I had this experience recently, that I pitched a why, how, what story to someone. And they came to me and says, we really love the why and the how. That was great. But does it have to be a vampire? Does it have to be a vampire story? Because we're not interested in vampire stories. And I was like, no, it doesn't have to be a vampire, because the important stuff is here. And if I had started with, it's a vampire story, then they would have been like, we're not interested in vampire stories, and just shut me down right there. But because I had started with what was important to me and how I was going to do it, he was intrigued, and he was willing to buy a book that normally he would not have done. So these are the three elements. Above them all, of course, is who you are. That's very important. But these three bits are the way to a successful pitch. And there's a biological reason for this. I found this out recently. This is hilarious. Whys go for people in their liminal brain. It's the part that does not process language, but that's where you get your gut feelings. The what and the hows work with language, and that's our neocortex. Neocortex does not make decisions. The liminal brain makes decisions. So if you can convince someone with the why, with their liminal brain, and then they can justify it in the neocortex, then you have already sold, because you have done the work for them, and now they are with you. Because the important thing is, and this is really what it comes down to, is that you don't want to do business with people who want what you have, because they can also get that from someone else. You want to do business with people who believe what you believe, who are down with your project, with your idea, from the get-go. And so that way, you are on the same page right from the start and can work forward. So, since this is a workshop and not a lecture, I'll shut up for a bit. Does everyone have something to write with and write on? Because I have stuff if you don't.
We also have some pencils over there, Bob.
Oh, awesome. I got some pens, too. So who needs stuff?
I can use some note cards.
Yeah, come on up. So you only need one, because we're not doing a...
Cool on all day.
The whole point is elevator pitches, as I'm sure Eric can tell you, so... So yeah, we've got some pens here. If you prefer pens, if you like to erase, you may want to go with a pencil.
Only if you make mistakes.
Jeez, never. Does it really need a pencil? You're gonna make a mistake. Why are you even bothering?
So I'm gonna leave this up here, but I'm gonna go to a seat. And while you guys are writing down your pitches, which you should be doing right now, because you're all going to be reading them aloud and we're going to be talking about them. Why don't you guys, since I've just monopolized the first 15 minutes of the convention, talk a little bit about your experiences of pitches and what's important you find.
Well, in my case, it's as a short story anthology editor, we get these stories. And they're short enough that a pitch isn't really necessary, but if your story has a clear, I guess we'll call it a why, if that's the theme, if your story has a clear theme that compels me as an editor, we can fix the how and the what to some degree. I can justify, like Jared was saying, I'm going to buy this story, even though it may not be a perfect fit genre-wise, and that there was a couple of clear examples in some recent issues. The story may not be a perfect fit, but the why is so compelling, the emotions and the themes of the story are so compelling, I can either encourage you as an author to tweak a few things and we can make it perfect, or I can justify buying it because I just really want this cool thematic, you know, deep, rich story. So absolutely, I think that theme, the why, is important to me as someone who gets pitches.
Question?
I'm actually not totally understanding the why and how the why.
Sure.
Is it possible for you to give me another example of a why how pitch?
Certainly. Oh, well, this is a very easy one. This is my favorite. Apple computers. Okay? They market directly in this format. They say, we believe in making technology beautiful and accessible. We do this by having well-designed pieces that we work very hard on design. We also make great computers. Yep. Most other people, PCs, talk about, we make great computers, here's how they're designed, and they don't even usually go into the why. And so that's right. And the beauty of this then later is that you remember that Apple is concerned with making accessible, well-designed stuff. So that you will buy an MP3 player from Apple. You will buy this other stuff beyond their computers because you understand their why. Does that make it more sense? Is that more clear? If not, Eric seems to have it.
There's an analogy I always like to make, and this is sort of a literary analogy so we can all sort of recognize it. Imagine the murder mystery. You have all the suspects sitting around the table. The first thing the detective or the person comes when they say in, I suppose you're wondering why I asked you all here. First thing, why am I here? Why am I reading this? Why do I care? So the first thing the detective does is tell everyone why they're here. Then they go through, you know, I'm now going to solve the mystery. Here's how I'm going to solve it. And then at the end of the speech, and before the end of the night, one of us will be dead, sort of thing. You know, and that's the progression in the story, and the reason all those murder mysteries work in that way is because your reader, that's the order they're interested in the story. Why am I reading this murder mystery? How is this murder mystery going to proceed? How is the detective going to solve it? Is it going to be Sherlock Holmes? Is it going to be, you know, Inspector Clouseau? How is it going to go? And what's going to happen in the story at the very end? And the murder mystery is always something I like to keep in my mind because that's what I'm telling people when I do a pitch. I'm introducing them to a mystery, and the mystery is my story.
It's a great example. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure. All right. So the Apple why is that they're interested in making accessible, well-designed technology. The how is they show you how this stuff is designed, they show you their commitment to design, they show you their commitment to accessibility. That's in all of their ads. And the what is that we also make great computers.
So it's why you're making it, how you make it, And what you made.
Yeah.
Because
people can buy computers from hundreds of places. But you will find people who are dedicated to being Apple users. And part of that is they identify with the why. It's like, yes, I want my computers to be functional and well-designed and be that, and have that sort of personal element that I'm not getting from the other computer makers. Uh-huh. And that's a very important thing. That's because this appeals, again, to that part of your brain, that gut feeling, that liminal brain where it's like, yes, I identify with that, I feel part of that, and all this other stuff is just justification of that gut feeling.
There's another good example, non-writing example, but I think it's a good example, is Tom's Shoes. Why they make the shoes they make to benefit kids in third world countries, how they make it. They talk about how well their shoes are made and how they plan on getting those shoes to those kids. And what is, well, we make shoes.
Right. Yeah, so, and they're very much into that whole idea that these are shoes for the planet, that you are helping someone else with these shoes. We are putting shoes on people who don't have them, and that's the why right there. So a lot of people, even though they're kind of some ugly shoes, it doesn't matter, because what people are buying is not the shoe. They are buying the feeling they get knowing that wearing these shoes means that someone else who couldn't have shoes is also wearing them. And that goes a long way.
Yeah.
So are people ready with their pitches, or do we still need some more time? Because we can keep jabbering.
Well, we love the jabber. Brent has a jabber.
Oh, Brent has a jabber. Jabber, Brent?
I'm still waking up.
Oh, before you do, because I want to know, how many people here are pitching writing projects? What is the half?
I love the elbow up in here.
We have two people like half raising their hands.
I'm thinking about
it. I know what you're pitching.
Today.
All right. So most people. Okay. I was just curious.
Cool.
Go ahead. Did I break your concentration?
Yeah, I lost it. Oh, wow.
Here, let me lead you then.
Yes, thank you.
We're talking about things in a very writerly sense. You work in a visual medium. How does this apply?
For me, and I want to preface this by saying, most of the pitches I'm doing are for music videos. That's mainly how I work in these. But I do look at it as, I've had a lot of opportunities in my life where I've had to basically talk my way into things. What you're doing in any of those situations, whether it's, for me, it was school-related, and also some extra credit stuff, but you're selling yourself, and that's the key thing. Now, I fully agree with you on the why, but for me, it's a little, the how is really, really important, because...
Oh, I'm not saying the how isn't important.
No, but I feel for writers, it's not, because I'm pitching, like, okay, we're going to go make this thing together.
Well, and I think that's, you're doing a collaborative meeting,
right.
So it is very important. But I think that still, to get people to want to do it with you.
Oh, no, totally.
You need that why to begin with. But yeah, the how is, I don't want to underestimate the importance of the how, both in collaborative and singular, because that is your plot, and that is that's where you show off your skills. So that's important. And especially in video, that requires so much planning.
Yeah, and it's basically showing, okay, you know, I can come up with this awesome idea, and it sounds great, in my head it looks great, but when I'm pitching to someone, they need to know that I, A, have the technical know-how, I can get the equipment we need, because that's one of the biggest things. You know, I can have all these great ideas, but if I need a crane, that's not going to happen. So... You got to be able to show you're not going to get a crane, but you're going to do a crane shot, that you already know how to do it, whether it's, you know, just a shot of your dog in the yard, but basically the shot itself, you know.
When you're pitching, the interesting thing that's different is, and this applies to some writers too, you're not pitching a product. You're not pitching your movie, which you should be. You should be pitching Corbin.
I can do that.
You're pitching yourself, and as a writer, if you write to spec, or if you write, you know, if you want to approach somebody and say, I want to write what you want me to write, you're selling yourself, so the why becomes, you know, why should I care about you, you know, what are you going to bring to the table, why am I going to resonate with you, so...
Because there's other filmmakers that they could go with, and I think
so.
I think that's the thing, because when you're pitching, you are not pitching... a diamond. You're
right.
Not saying this is the only thing, a snowflake. You're saying I'm really good at what I do and I'm better than these other people who are doing this as well, and here's why. Because this...
If I could expand upon this.
Sure,
I mean,
yeah.
I have never pitched to an individual person ever. I do everything on the web, but I have to use the same format to get my work out there. Because every single reader that you want to get is your editor, and they have the exact same question. Why should I waste my time on your site? How are you going to proceed with this story? And what am I going to see when I get there? And they want to know that, and they want to know that in under 10 seconds.
Because after 10 seconds, if you look at the stats, if they couldn't figure it out in 10 seconds, they're gone. Mm-hmm. And you've just lost the reader. And I have found on every web project that I have, if I have a strong pitch, if I have that strong thing built into the site, built into the story, built into everything in there, so that someone comes in and says, I know exactly what I'm going to get when I go through this, I get a much higher result than if I have, this is great, just read it and you'll figure out. Because everyone will say, no, I got 1,000 other things to read on the web. I've got plenty of pictures of frightened kittens to look at. I don't have time for you.
So, see, most people have stopped writing. So I guess we're ready for pitches.
Who's our first?
Veronica's in front, so she gets to go first. And we'll just go by rows. That'll be the easiest way. The people in the back row are now very excited that they sat here. They got more time. Just stand up, because you're pitching to us.
You're right.
Okay. Those people aren't going to critique you.
Okay.
They're your friends.
Me.
Or your competition.
Nah. Okay. I'm Veronica Jaguar, and I'd like to give short story authors a place to sell their audio to enhance their current new media experience. Because I think short story authors should be able to sell quality audio to enhance their current projects. And I can provide a user-friendly interface that allows your audience to find and purchase your short stories. One-Shot Audio will be live 2012, and it will be that marketplace for audio short fiction.
Can you read the first two sentences again?
Hi. Well, I'm Veronica Jaguar.
Beyond them, Veronica, yeah.
I want to give short story authors a place to sell their audio to enhance their current new media experience. I think short story authors should be able to sell quality audio to enhance their current projects.
Okay, I want you to read the pitch again. Do not include that first sentence. Just go right from the seconds.
I think short story authors should be able to sell quality audio to enhance their current projects. I can provide a user-friendly interface that allows your audience to find and purchase your short stories. One-Shot Audio, live by 2012, will be that audio short fiction market.
See, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
Once you took out that first sentence,
yeah.
You were kind of.
I think I restarted.
Yeah. And why that was good is because you started writing the thing. Yeah, if you want. You started with like I think, and it's corny to start with like I think, I believe, all that stuff. But that is what you want people to identify. It's like this is my thoughts. This is who I am. I'm committed to this. And so starting with that seems a little awkward and unnatural and corny. But it is important because it gets my attention, certainly. Mm-hmm. And what do you guys have to say?
Yeah, I think it was good. I think eliminating the first, there's a little bit of redundancy in there, but I mean, obviously this is a rough draft. So, you know, but yeah, clearly I got a sense of the why, you know, why I should care about what you're doing, why it's different from what other people are doing. So I think that was clear. The what was clear. The how was a little...
Probably because I'm trying to stay away from comparing it to another common threat. The other bit I said is it's smash words for audio.
Yeah, I think
that... And not everyone understands what that is.
I think the how that you were a little vague on that is okay.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Then that means, like, well, tell me more.
Yeah.
And then you can get that. I think you have a how enough to get people's attention and to get their idea across. And if they are interested in that, then they can go for it. That's what I think. But yeah. You guys may have different opinions on that.
The how being vague, that was okay with me. Mm-hmm. The one thing I think that might be able to help is don't set the hard deadline that it's going to be the 2012.
That's an help.
My reasoning is when I heard that, I was like, okay, this is going to be a while. And I kind of lost interest.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if that is actually the case, but if you can make it sound like this is happening now, jump on board.
Immediacy is mm-hmm. good.
Yeah. I mean, based off of that, there's two sort of themes that I'd like to bring out here. You don't have to put in every single detail. So if your how is a little vague, that's okay if it draws me in. Now, you have to have a how to follow up, because after hearing that pitch, the first thing I would ask you and the first thing everyone's going to ask you, how are you going to do that?
Yeah.
And if you go, well, then bye.
Yeah.
But that's the question you want.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But absolutely. The other thing, yeah, coming in 2012, how does that excite me at all? I mean, how does that get my interest?
The world's going to be ending in 2012.
Yeah,
anyway,
I mean, but
it was supposed to end before Balticon.
I mean, I see why you have that in there, because you want to show that whether you're a part of this or not, it's going to happen. Yeah. I'm doing this, and I understand that's why that's there. It's like, this is going to go up. I hope you're a part of it, but if you're not, it's still going to happen.
Yeah,
and I understand that that's there, but then they have a point that 2012 is next year,
and a pitch should, in some ways, be timeless because you're going to have to use that pitch after you're already up. So,
yeah, I'm talking more on the basic psychology of things. Do people like numbers or do they not like numbers? How many people here loved calculus?
It is a geek convention.
In a geek convention, two people in the room raise their hands, and there's going to be a lot of...
Yeah, but a year is not a complex math equation.
No.
Let's not pretend it's something it's not.
No.
Well, yet again, I'm coming from web. I'm coming from the public. And any time I put numbers in anything, I see a drop. Because people go, numbers.
And in terms of if I want to know, if I come to you and say, if you give me the pitch without the year, and I say, okay, you know, when can I do this, then you can say...
I mean, let's just hear the pitch without the year.
Yeah,
Because we're just see if it's any better.
I think short story authors should be able to sell quality audio to enhance their current projects. Mm-hmm. I can provide a user-friendly interface that allows your audience to find and purchase your short stories. One-shot audio will be that audio short fiction marketplace.
I mean, exactly.
It does sound more concise once you take the year out.
Because
you're confident. We know it's going to happen because you have said this. So adding that, it's definitely going to come up. And 2012 may not be necessary.
The use of the word will be is really good in that pitch. And that's a very strong active verb. It will be. Well, a lot of pitches that I've heard are ruined because they say, this could be.
Right.
Yeah. It might.
Right.
You know, this should. Well, if you're not sure about it, I'm gone.
that was solid, and I like the only thing else I would tweak is you said I can provide or I can sort of in the second sentence.
Yeah.
Yeah, you may want to change that to will.
I will provide. Yeah. This will happen. It is awesome.
Yeah. You want to make the pitch sound like a freight train without sounding arrogant.
Yes.
You know.
That sounded confident. That sounded, it's gonna happen. And I am interested, and I want to know more. We'll talk. Awesome.
One thing I want to go back to the numbers thing. Numbers can work. It depends on what you're pitching. A lot of the stuff I'm pitching, seriously, about 75% of the pitch is actually my budget, which is just flat-out numbers.
Right.
And, great, I have this awesome idea, but how cheap can I make it?
Mm.
And you want to use numbers if they're either really big and going to have an impact or really small and going to have an impact. And it depends on what you're talking about. You know, I can get you 5 million views for $4. I'm not saying that's a thing.
Sold.
Yeah.
I'd like to talk to you later.
Those two big and small numbers, you know, hit you, but at the same time, you need to know who you're talking to. I pitched a music video to someone yesterday, and I said, like, yeah, and my video did X, and they're like, oh, well, I did this thing in my garage, and they did double that. I was like, crap. So you just, it's good to be very, very informed on who you're pitching, if you can. Obviously, if you're meeting someone at a con in a bar, you're not going to have that, but in a more sort of professionalized setting, the more information.
But the idea
you have
that very big and very small numbers make an impact, that's an important thing to take away. So you're up. No, you're up.
I hadn't really planned on this, so I'm sort of going to listen. It's like, so how did they do this? All right. We'll give it a shot anyway.
Yeah.
My name is Melina Canet, and
Well, as anyone who's ever lived in the suburbs knows, they're kind of a dead zone. There's nearly not a whole lot going on there. You've got the cities, which have, you know, people and lots of energy and things happening. And you've got, you know, nature areas out further beyond the suburbs where you've got, like, wildlife and very natural energy. And then you have, you know, places like here, which is the suburbs. Not so much is happening there. What I'm looking at is Subversion of Magic is going to take this idea and it's going to apply it to the world of magic. And there's magic energy either comes from the city or it comes from nature. And the suburbs are sort of a dead zone in between. They're the dividing lines. They're the place where they go to have their truces, there they go to meet because nothing magical can happen there. And then there's Myrtle. She can't perform magic in either the city or the nature areas. But when she finally ends up in the suburbs, something happens, and stories about her, how she finds her place, and what happens to her.
All right. It took you a long time to get to the meat, and we still didn't get a really strong why. I can infer your why, because you had a really good concept. This is a common writer thing, is that I love to annoy my writer friends, because they will tell me about their story, and I will say, what is it about? And they will tell me the plot, and I'll be like, no. What is it about? And they will give me something like what you did, and that's the great concept. But that is not what it is about. And the question is, you have this idea of suburbs being in between magical areas. What are you saying? That this is a good thing? That this is a bad thing? That suburbs are much magical than people give them credit for? What are you saying about this setting, this idea, which I like. I like the concept, but what are you saying about it? What's your opinion on suburbs?
My opinion
on
suburbs?
Yeah,
Or the story's opinion on suburbs.
Right. What are you saying?
My opinion is I can't live with them. I can do the New York Street. I do find cities, I do find in the middle of nowhere. I actually can't do suburbs. But the suburbs are the areas that they're the blend, and
right,
it's a place of balance,
right,
and it's about finding that balance.
So the suburbs are a place where you find balance, is that
right? Neither has a strong influence. It's a combination.
So your why might be, and this is not necessarily so, and we can argue about this, but your why might be that you think, or you believe, I believe that suburbs are a place being in between the cities and the country where balance is achieved and unusual things can happen. And then you talk about Myrtle. Because I am hooked on that idea that suburbs are where the gray areas, the soft spots, I like that a lot. And that's a really strong concept. But you need that I statement, that why, that theme, that makes this a more compelling urban fantasy or suburban fantasy than...
Even that, the suburban fan, that's kind of cool.
It's a really strong concept. I mean, this is a great idea.
The other thing that you don't want to do is tell someone something that everybody already knows. So since everybody already knows that suburbs are X, you can leave that out. You don't have to describe what suburbs are, but yeah, you can say that because you've picked a very common trope that everybody does know about. So that's great. And now you tell us what you think about them. Like Jared said, they're that balance point. They're that place where weird things can happen because they're neither A nor B.
One idea I just had, and this you might want to try pitching it like this. With Jared, when he was talking about the girl falling in love with the bad vampire boy, you didn't find that out until the end of it. And I feel like the suburb thing, you could actually use it a pretty strong sort of twist in the end of your pitch and make it just talk about this person trying to find their place, and they find their place in this unusual spot. And I don't find out it's suburban fantasy until you say suburban fantasy.
Right. Like, is the point that suburbs are unusual? Is the point that this woman who could not find herself anywhere suddenly finds herself? I mean, something I didn't talk about earlier is, what is your goal? What is your goal with the story? What is your goal with the pitch? How do you define success? Like, I have told the story successfully. And if your goal is, we are following this woman who suddenly realizes herself much later in life than she expected, then that is your why. Mm-hmm. If it's about suburbs are unusual, that is your why. If it's about countless other things that it could be and still be in that description that you gave us of the concept that was very interesting of this woman who finds magic in the least likely places. So I think it depends on your goal and where you're going with it and where the story lies. And that is something that's important to identify before you write it. It's important to certainly identify before you're talking about it. So.
Yeah, I think I'm not interested in why.
Okay. Can I jump in here?
Yeah.
I got an example.
I mean, yeah. These guys have stolen all my thunder because they said all the things I wanted to say. First of all, I do like the concept. The why, and there's two key points. First of all, one of the big mistakes that people often make when they're making a pitch is they say, well, I'm not going to give away the ending. Okay? When you're pitching to anyone except the general public, the ending, especially if the ending is awesome, that's what you want to tell me. You want to tell me the most awesome part about your story. It doesn't, because I'm an editor, I'm not going to go out and say, I'm going to ruin the end of the story we just bought. So
I'd be more inclined to want to tell you that she's about to be kicked out of the magic realms, and she...
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
That's meat. Yeah. I mean, that's your how there. That's...
And then she finds her place, she finds her power, but then she must decide whether or not to stay or to go.
Well, oh, that's great. Why didn't you include that?
Yeah, that's...
Yeah.
Because I'm still trying to figure out what the hell you're asking me to do.
Okay, so here's the idea of the pitch.
You didn't ask me to pitch how I do. You asked me to tell you why, how, and what.
Here's the idea of the pitch. You are trying to somehow, in literally 15, you know, half a minute, drill into this person's brain and give them the entire knowledge of the story as if they've read your entire story. So you want them to walk away as if they had read the entire book. Hmm. And so it's a very hard thing. You're condensing the entire book, or entire whatever you're working down to... one or two sentences. And so this
Which
is
tough. That
this
is tough.
Why
that is
we
hard.
Have this why have. The why, the idea of the why is, what's awesome about this? Why did you write this story? I mean, no one in this room sat down and said, I'm going to write a boring and tedious book. I'm going to try to make this as unexciting, and it's going to be about things I hate, and it's going to deal with issues that I find dull. There's an issue, there's a core, there's something that propelled you through this narrative. That's what the first thing you've got to tell the people.
Yeah, what excites you about this
what
story?
What propelled us? The why is, this is awesome because...
Actually, the setting of the suburbs is what really started me with, and figuring out who was there, why they were there. And what on earth could happen to the suburbs?
Okay.
So you're starting off with the magic of the suburbs, you know, and suburban fantasy is such a great term.
It's a good hook. It's a really good hook,
because right there you're saying the magic of the suburbs, and you're right there. Everyone's drawn into why you wrote that, and then the what is. Okay, what's the awesome part about this story? What's the part when you were writing down, you're like, yes, that's the point I was leading up to. This is what all this story is about. Give away the ending. Give away the thing that everyone's going to go, that is the greatest part of this thing. And, I mean, if you're thinking about movie, it's the best part of that movie. It's the thing that everyone's saying is awesome. Because, you know... If you're talking about, let's take Empire Strikes Back. You should include in that pitch, Luke, I am your father. You know, because that was the point where everyone went, whoa, what just happened here? You know, and you're giving them the whole story. And you want to give them the best part. The what is the shape of this thing? You know. Are you sending it to us in smoke signals? You know, how is this thing going to work?
I mean, you know
work?
What your what is a book, I'm assuming. Yeah.
Okay, so the what is the format.
The product.
It's not, not the synopsis.
No,
right.
No.
The what is, this is a fantasy book.
We.
Okay, so the why is why I'm writing it, the how is what I'm writing, and the...
The what is
the format.
The when you are done, what will you have?
I want to, and I want to keep you away from what you're writing, because that's going to lead you to 15 pages of text.
Yeah.
The how is what's awesome. How am I going to reach in and touch your soul? That's what I want to hear.
How do you express the why?
Yeah.
And you express the why through these characters, through this plot, through this setting.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
There was a great panel here about what's more important, character or setting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you're telling it. What's the important part of this story? Is it an ensemble cast, so you're really talking about this suburban setting, and we're going to see it from a whole different point of views? Is it the story of one girl and her particular challenge? You can... This is how. This is why.
Yeah.
The why is...
The why is the spark.
The spark.
Yeah. The why is what got you started writing.
Hmm. Or why we should pick the book up in the first place.
The why is what you believe. Yeah. This is the easiest way to do it. It's what you think. It's what you believe. It's what makes this your heart of heart favorite idea. The how is how you express this idea in a way that other people can enjoy it. Be that making an iPod with a touch screen base that everyone can use just by poking it, or a narrative involving characters in a setting. That's how you express what you believe. And the what is the final product. This is a fantasy novel. This was a serialized podcast. This is a bunch of billboards that will put up on the highway, and by the time they get to Poughkeepsie, they will see the story. That's the what. And that, and like I said before, that is less important than the why you're doing it and how you're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people get bogged down in what it's going to be, and that could change. Because the person you're pitching to be like, I really like that. I don't want to do it as a print novel, though. I want to do it as a series of serialized short stories and author. Awesome. Moving on.
just to give you guys an example, I just wrote out a fast pitch here. So, I want to tell a story. It's a film, and I'm a little off the cuff with this, but I want to tell a story about what it is to be human. How corporations can dehumanize you. Now, what I just told you there is the what. Now, what movie I could be pitching? I mean, right now, I'm still pitching you either Blade Runner or Moon. Either way. Now, it's the why that makes the difference. In Blade Runner, this is just my opinion, so you could think I'm dead wrong. But Blade Runner is way more about the cultural. How do people react to these things? How does it affect our lives? How do we conduct ourselves? Whereas Moon is about a personal story, a man trying to deal with the fact that he's discovering this. That's where the difference is. And that's what you want to... I'm not sure if that was clear at all. It's a lot
I liked
better
it,
in my
though.
Head.
I liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But moving on. We really need to move on if we want to get to everyone. So, Hugh, you're up.
My name is Hugh O'Donnell. I'm pitching my novel, The Ace of Swords. As a teenager, everything seems out of your control. If you're a magician just learning your powers, gaining control is a matter of life and death, especially when you're caught between a bureaucracy that wants to neuter you and a serial killer.
Ooh.
All right. I have a question for you. Why is this different than Harry Potter?
Because it is much more violent, much more adult, and it deals with themes... Because he's a magician that's different from all the other magicians. Which is, I guess, not so different from Harry Potter, actually.
I mean, I'm picking on you, but the idea is that I'm sure your book that you have in your head is different than Harry Potter. But you just described Harry Potter to me.
It's not light at all.
Okay.
All right, but that didn't come through in what you said.
Why is it not light?
Why?
Why do we need a not light Harry Potter?
It's structured, it's divided in half, so it follows...
I don't care how it's structured. Why do we need a not light Harry Potter? What need is that filling? Because I know there's a need. I'm trying to lead you to this.
All right.
There is a reason you wrote this book. There is a reason why you thought, Harry, you know, this sort of, if you took a darker look at these things and were more serious about it and less, less, everything's magical. I'm on the same wavelength, but I see there's a reason why you wrote this. You haven't communicated why we need a darker Harry Potter. Because that's
or even why it's different than Harry Potter. Like, what is different about it? Because I know there's something.
It's urban, high fantasy, hybrid kind of thing, where he's the only magician of this, like, he just has powers, he's not a trained magician, and he is exceedingly dangerous to himself and others.
Okay.
That needs to come out. That's
the important part.
Yeah.
I mean, that's your why right there.
Yeah.
And you had a little bit of that. I know you're looking at your notes and it's like, I thought I said that. But it didn't quite come across. And the idea is that how dangerous he is. Say more about that.
Yeah.
Like, is he gonna explode? Is he gonna burn his own hands off? Are other people wanting to kill him because he's a wizard? Why is he in danger?
He pretty much, and at the end of the book, he kind of does, he can generate massive storms.
Okay.
That could destroy the entire city.
All right. Mm-hmm. So that's his thing, is storm magic.
Yes.
All right. See, this is important. These details that make up your how are important. Because then you can answer questions like, well, how is this different than Harry Potter?
Yeah.
Like, if he's a storm magician, you know, and how does that make him dangerous? Is he going to be struck by his own lightning? I mean, what's...
He just generated a tornado that would destroy the city.
Accidentally or on purpose?
Accidentally.
Okay, that's important.
Who's your target audience for this?
15, 16-year-old YA.
Okay, so it is YA. Okay, cool. Because what you pitched me was just, okay, you know, I read Harry Potter as a kid, but you know what? I want something that's going to, you know, take someone, stomp them on the curb. I want something really hardcore, and that's what I got from your pitch. So that's why I asked. But I felt a little unclear on the target. And then you said the violence, so I was like, yeah, this is going to be awesome. So... I think, especially for this sort of thing with young adult, you might want to be clear about that and sort of gauge the level of the violence in the story, because just so that people understand what to get.
I'm going to put words into your mouth right now, because I see the form of something. And so Harry Potter was for kids, and Harry Potter addressed issues that young kids have, issues of abandonment, issues of finding power and that sort of thing. Your story you said it's targeted a slightly older kid. And it sounds like feeling that you're dangerous, feeling that everything you can do destroys the world around you, feeling out of control. Those are issues that young adults are interested in. That's
part of
why. That's why this book exists and what you're addressing. And I got to hear that, because then I'm going to say, this is going to make a great young adult book, because this guy gets young adults, and this book is targeted to that.
You have a question?
Actually, I'm just thinking, you had been asking how is it different from Harry Potter, and for the most part, I have my issues, but Harry Potter does what it does very well. Where this is different is that Harry's problems come from outside him.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
This character's problems come from inside him, mm-hmm. and that's something that's much more a concern of real young adults in the real world.
Yeah, right. that's a good, very astute, sir.
Very astute.
So, yeah, moving on. Yes, sir.
Okay. I'm fascinated with how people break out of social norms.
Who are you?
Oh, I'm Tim.
Okay, thank you.
I'm fascinated with how people break out of social norms and become leaders in social revolutions. I want to show young adults going through kind of the growing pains of becoming leaders and making their own choices. my young adult science fiction. We'll put my characters, young pilots, kind of a la Ender's Game, into a galactic community where they both want to defend Earth and the greater galaxy, but they have to learn to refuse the fight when it doesn't match what I believe.
All right. So you say you're interested in how people become leaders. We are all interested in how people become leaders. That's very interesting. What perspective do you have on that? Are you saying that people become leaders under the harshest adversary?
What?
You keep on stealing what I'm going to say.
That's why I go first. All right. Next one, you'll go first. And I'll, I'll be like, why are you taking what I'm saying? So what is your perspective on that? What is your point of view? Because that's what we could come back to, is what is your particular point of view on how people become leaders?
Sure.
And so I doesn't feel like I'm just picking on you. How is this different from Ender's Game? Because I can read Ender's Game.
Sure.
And don't mention Ender's Game in your pitch.
Okay.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with saying that, because some people hate this.
Okay.
I think it's actually kind of useful in this sense, because you say things like, Ender's Game meets Fast and the Furious.
Right, yeah. I'm coming up with a lecture where they just
and
told us.
Some people hate that and some people like it, but if that's how your mind works, then it's no shame to use that.
Mm-hmm.
But how is this different from Ender's Game?
The biggest difference is the moral dilemma, the big reveal doesn't come at the end in the way Ender's Game does. That you start to see these moral dilemmas early and the characters actually get a chance to deal with them.
Well, I seem to remember moral dilemmas early in Ender's Game.
Well, but the idea of he's really wiping out a whole other race.
Yeah, he didn't know how big the moral quality
right.
was.
Well, that's true.
So basically, it's you believe people become leaders by facing morally challenging questions, and what decisions they make determine their future as a leader. How that molds and shapes them.
That's in there. I mean, you asked kind of my background, and it's I've got a MBA in negotiation and conflict management. I'm coming kind of this a Gandhi scholar. there's a background.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem with your pitch is it's very broad.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't really tell me about your particular work of fiction and why that's interesting. To contrast that to the Enlightenment's front, whose name I've already forgotten.
Melina,
she had a very unusual idea right off the bat.
Okay.
And that yours seems very broad and it's about very big topics, which is good, but I don't see your opinion on those big topics. I just see the big topics.
The one thing also with the pitch, pretty much I want the whole story. Does the disillusionment happen halfway through, or is that at the end? Because with how you pitched it right now, it sounds like it's sort of a, oh crap, like Ender's Game, where it kind of happens at the end, or does that happen in the middle, which is, I think is how it happens.
Yeah,
and is this a Heinlein thing, when they have to learn that even though they don't believe with it, they still have to follow the rules of their higher commanders?
Do they go renegade?
That
it's
better
a rebellion story
for them to do
it?
Yeah.
System?
What is your idea? Is that leaders rebel? Leaders decide to put their own personal problems aside for the good of the group? What is your take on this?
I'll have to find out.
Yeah.
Or that it's kind of a leaders transform the society they're in, not just follow or rebel.
Okay.
One comment before we move on.
Yeah.
And this is, I'm sorry to pick on you and this sort of thing. One of the things I've heard a lot in pitches, they start off with a great why. I think that we are all connected on a spiritual level. Oh, that's great. My story is about construction workers. What? and you start going into the story, and you don't see how that really powerful, sentence that started out flows into the story. And that was, I think that's what a lot of people hear. You said Ender's Games that were like, yeah, people sort of became leaders in Ender's Game, but how is that happening? How does young people be? Why am I writing this story? Here's a spark. How am I implementing this spark into the story? what is this story going to look like? And you had sort of three good hearts, but they weren't really connected to anything.
Yeah. Moving on.
Yep. Yeah.
Everyone has this look of doom now.
That's because I hate public speaking, and I thought this wasn't a workshop. It was a how to do a pitch, and I've never thought about doing a pitch before.
That's fine. That's fine.
Okay. I'm Lynette Thibodeau, and I want to tell a story about a woman who has to decide to do what the family has always done, or more what she thinks that she would be good at. It's a murder mystery set on a military war, in a military base, and the story will be solved by a bubbling female detective. The reason she's a detective is this is the family business. They've always been in police work. But she's not good at it. At all. It'll be told by flashbacks as she discovers the clues back to her past and the past of the murdered person. And the what is, it's an alternate world where turtles are the sentient being.
Yes.
Okay. Some still have their hard shell, mm-hmm. and they're in the military because they need their hard shell. Others have evolved without the shell, and they put the shells on as they need it.
I'm sold.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a little disorganized, but that is great. I mean, you have a really strong character right off the bat. That I love the concept of the turtles.
Yeah.
But more than that, I love the central idea that this woman is having to choose between what her family has always done and what she wants to do. I love that it's on a military base. Mm-hmm. I love that it's a murder mystery. I mean, all these things are great and different and zero in on exactly the kind of stuff that I'm looking for.
And
so
I see it as becoming a series as
you are you done through. With it? Can I read it now?
I haven't started it. It was a dream.
Write it.
It was a dream one night.
Nice.
And I saw the whole series while I was dreaming it.
Nice.
But I see it as a series of then you go from the military back out to the police to a different character, and you can follow different characters.
I definitely like the why of, you know, the tension between staying in the family business or striking out on your own. That's a good,
that's great.
That's a good why.
Do you have it written down there? Did I actually read that? Or?
No.
Okay. You had three really great sentences in there. And then you had a lot of filler that just didn't need to be in there.
I mean, and part of that is you haven't written it down yet.
But it's
still all in your head.
You started off a woman struggling against doing what she had to do, a family. And the first three sentences were great. It was woman struggling against what she wanted to do versus what the family has already done. Then you actually went into how you're going to tell that. It's, you know, it's going to be a murder mystery.
Military base,
bumbling female detective. I'm like, that is awesome. I'm on board. And then you started talking more, and I'm like, oh, okay. And then you jumped to, it's a world where people evolved from turtles. And I'm like, oh, I'm back again. You know?
you had all the great points.
And really, the world where if you've ever seen Seinfeld, leave them on a good note. The world where they evolve from turtles, shut up. That's it. There is nothing else to say after that. There's no way you can make that any better.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's a little disorganized, but it's great. It's so great that we're going to move on. Because
well done.
Good
well
job.
Done.
No,
it's a 2 hours. It's a 2 hour panel.
I mean, if you want to go, that's fair.
No,
The lady in the blue hat, I believe, is next.
My name is Judy Ross. I believe that there's a point in everyone's life when you have to rely on your own inner resources, abilities, and instincts, and you learn that they are usually greater than you thought they were. In my time young adult novel. I show this using a 17-year-old girl as the narrator. She and her foster brother are snatched from everything they know when they're shanghaied and forced to serve as crew on a spaceship. As we work on an escape plan while trying to keep her brother's genetically engineered special abilities secret, they discover friends where they thought they had enemies and enemies where they thought they would find friends. She has always relied on her brother and his abilities, but in the end, when he's incapacitated, she learns that she can rely on her own abilities and that she's capable of doing far more than she thought she could.
The only thing I would change would move future time young adult novel to the end.
Right.
Because that's at that point in the pitch, I'm not interested in what you're doing. I'm interested in how. And you gave me the how in a really nice way. I like. Yeah. I'm intrigued into this book.
Mm-hmm. Yes. One thing, this you might want to make this a bit more clear. I wasn't sure if this sister had powers at all, or if she was just a regular person. Okay, cool. I feel like if you can make that a bit more clear, it adds another aspect to the story as opposed to, well, shoot, I figured out how to use my powers now. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's a bit different story.
Yeah, that's a good detail.
I have, yet again, two comments. And I'm going to be a little harsh on this one because from where I come from, this has two big problems.
That's why you're here.
First of all, friends become enemy, enemy becomes friends. It's like fingernails on a chalkboard for me. I mean, there are certain phrases where, you know, that are so cliched, and you can do the movie, you know, it's like Batman meets Anne of Green Gables sort of
thing. I would read that.
Yes.
In a heartbeat.
Batman meets anything.
Dude. Edwardian era young lady who's also an Avenger of the Night. I'm sold.
I am sold.
But you can do that because if you have something like that where there's the cultural lexicon, everyone can get into it. But the friends become enemies, enemies becomes friends, you know. They must look within themselves to go. These terms have been thrown around so much, they become meaningless. And when someone sees that, it is just filler.
I don't think that part's necessary because you've already got the tension of they're slaves on this military ship. They don't want to be there. Yeah, there's already enough traumatic tension that you don't necessarily need to add that in the pitch. It can come out in the story, but you don't necessarily need to have it in the pitch.
And really my challenge for you when you're looking at this pitch, try to get it down to three sentences. Because there was a lot of sort of expanding of your concepts where you were trying to make it sound good. And, I mean, that's great, but that's not what you're doing in a pitch. You're just trying to get the idea across. And then if you have a letter or if you have more explanation, you can show what a good writer you are. You don't show you're a good writer in your pitch. Because if you've got too much, I'm going to phrase this in a way that's interesting, it's also long. And I, you know, yet again, internet, I've got plenty of kittens to look at. I don't have time for your pitch, you know, and that sort of thing.
Brevity is always your friend.
And some of it was redundant. I mean, you laid out that concept so well in the beginning that you didn't have to state it again at the end. Mm-hmm. So, moving on. He's there.
I don't know if we're going to hear this.
We do. That's why we're here.
Yep.
It's
okay.
No, it's fine.
It's good.
The rules apply. We've talked a lot about fiction, but that doesn't mean that these kind of concepts don't apply to other projects.
Yeah. This could be an automotive service.
I used to break immigration projects, and now the DC is a bureaucrat. This is a pitch for a senior policy council or a
regular
pitch.
Okay. Oh, great.
Great.
Bring it.
Okay. With the implementation of the Hague Convention.
Who are you?
Oh, I'm too cheap. I'm your friendly neighborhood patient bureaucrat. With the implementation of the Hague Convention on Intercountry Adoptions,
The United States now has two separate and unequal intercountry adoption processes. One for adopting children from Hague signatory countries, and those for adopting children from non-Hague countries. This results in DHS having to maintain two separate processing systems for adopting children, depending on where in the world they come from. It results in the Hague process having all functions funded, and the traditional non-Hague process only having about two-thirds of the processes funded. We don't receive tax dollars, so our other customers eat the increased cost. Parents lose flexibility. If they decide to change from a Hague country to a non, or vice versa, they need to begin the process all over again with all the fees, all the background checks, all the verifications. The child loses protection that he would have had under the Hague Convention. And it results in disruptive adoptions. Parents can adopt a child, and we can deny them permission to bring them in as a child. And children are stuck in limbo. They're adopted, but they're still overseas. What we need to do is to do a wholesale rewrite of the traditional non-Hague orphan regulation to bring them into concurrence with the Hague regulations. We can't rewrite Hague. That's an international treaty. That's set in stone. We will replace informal letters requesting changes and updates with forms that carry fees. That creates a standardized process, creates a way to fund the actions the agency has to do, and speeds up the traditional system by creating a formal process. We need to require that DHS completes the investigation and the approval before the adoption is allowed to take place. And we need to create identical eligibility standards for the parents. When we say, yes, you are suitable as a parent to adopt this particular child, we need to make them identical with the Hague process. So when they switch from one country to another, it's seamless, and we can simply transfer that adjudication from one to the other.
You got all of that on 3x5 index card?
Well, short. The next 12 months of my life.
Short answer.
Who's your target for this pitch?
Senior Policy Council. Some of them are political appointees. Most of them are career staff who advise political appointees. The composition changes from the
community. For the purpose of this workshop, you spent a lot of time in the beginning talking about how these two things are unequal. And I think for the audience that you're going for, you need to do that. In general, you kind of laid it out very cleanly. It's like, this is unequal. This is wrong. That was your why. And then later you talked about, and here's how we fix it. We need to do these changes. And for the purpose of this workshop, that would be better. I'm not sure for your audience that cutting out the stuff that you were talking about why it's unequal is something you should do, because perhaps for your audience you need to lay all that stuff out and remind people. But you had a really strong why right in the beginning, which I loved, which was that this is wrong, this is unequal. And that was something we can all learn from, because that was right off the bat we had an issue and we knew how you felt about it. And then you very cleanly later laid out how we're going to fix that. And these are the ways, and I really like that.
Yeah. I want to apply two structures that you should think about. And this has come, my day job is a corporate trainer, so I do training a lot. There are two things you have to remember when talking with human beings, and it doesn't matter, you know, how advanced they are. Yours was very good because it had all of the information that these policymakers are going to be interested in. When we talk about this pitch workshop, we're saying really small because the editors are only interested in a very small amount. But one of the things you've got to remember is, first, tell, teach, tell, which is state what the issue is, teach them how this issue came about, and then rephrase the issue at the end to remind them why they went through this. You started off due to the Hague Conventions, due to this. You've got to start off, why am I talking to you? Now, there is a problem with adoptions, because, and this comes from, and then go into the regulations. Go through the regulations, sum up, tell them again, this created this problem with adoptions and with funding. Tell, teach, tell. And you should do that for each part. But also, when you're teaching people, or when you're trying, and this is what you're trying to do, educate about the problem, what you do is three steps. You explain the problem. Problem exists. There is this problem. You then go through and tell them what caused the problem. The problem exists because of these factors. And then you give the solution to the problem. The solution to the problem is because of these ones, and with each...
I don't want to step on you, but isn't that what he did?
Yes, he did.
okay, good.
Yeah, no, and he did that. And that's the structure you take, but within each of those structures, you make sure that you use the tell, teach, tell method at each one. The problem is, blah, 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 caused by blah, 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 this is the problem. This problem exists because, and go through all that, this causes the problem. The solution is, tell the solution, go through how the solution is implemented in detail, and this will solve all of our problems.
So you're suggesting a parallel structure where the opening thematic sentence is echoed.
You have to...
It's drilling it in.
You have to... People have to... And this is all due to expectations. People, their brain, the way their brains work, when you tell them what to expect... They know they can incorporate information better. So if I came up here and I sit down and I say, now the first thing you have to do is get a big vat, and then you're going to fill it with milk, and then you're going to mix all and go through this, and at the end, and I say, this is how you make cheese. Everyone's going to go, oh, you're talking about cheese, not writing, and without creating the expectation, they can't incorporate the knowledge. Without rephrasing at the end, they can't fix it in their mind. So the tell, teach, tell method helps people fix things in their mind. And the create the problem, explain the problem, solve the problem is how people like to go through, you know, narrative structures. And so you did a very good job.
Yeah.
There was just, I wanted to mention those structures because that helps fix things in people's heads.
And that was
kind of dense.
Yeah, it is. You're dealing with a very dense issue.
And that's the other thing, you know, we say keep it short, but that, again, depends on your audience
and
what you're pitching.
And you had a lot of information.
Yeah.
So
this is nothing compared
to the whole
thing.
Oh, my
God. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
David came in late, so.
I'm Mark Sarney, and I've rewritten the pitch I had.
That's all right. That's the benefit of sitting further back.
And coming and going, oh, I have a how, I don't need one. thought I had a what. What if some parts of society benefit from the accelerating pace of life more than others, and the others that don't feel threatened enough, they backlash and try to create a more stable society? Nick is a guy who's torn between his kind of stabilized family and his, I want to join the rat race dreams of predicting the future with off-worlders. But when nonviolent terrorists, stabilized terrorists, decided to destroy civilization and do social epidemics, Nick is the only guy who can predict the future and figure out a way to prevent that from happening. But when he discovers how to prevent this apocalypse, he discovers a secret about being able to predict the future and stabilize terrorists that will have to make the choice between saving the world or being.
What's the secret?
The secret is actually that the family involved on both sides and it's going to have to take someone out from that family, which will have to compromise the principle of trying not to hurt families. It's essentially estranged from its own.
That's...
There. Hey, now we have the pitch.
Estrangement. Yeah. Estrangement is big.
Yeah.
I just didn't know how much.
Right, well, I mean, and it comes back down to what is your story about? Because you started with what seemed like a why, but it was your concept. It wasn't your theme. Your theme is about this guy who's estranged from families. The important thing seems to be family and his relationship to his own and the way these other people are relationship. And so I think that's your why. You have an interesting concept and an interesting idea of a future world that I want to know more, especially about the stabilizers and how they are nonviolent terrorists and what they do.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you can't be a nonviolent terrorist, but that's a great contradiction that gets me intrigued. Mm. So there's that element there. I think the heart of your story, and I we're seeing this a lot, is people are holding back from the heart of their story. And the person you're pitching to is not going to steal your story. They're not going to take your great idea and write their own. If they could do that, they would be writing their own stories and would not be in publishing or all that sort of thing. They have their own stories to write. I think we get very tight and hold on to these and like, you're not getting my secret. And I don't think that's... Ideas are common.
Right.
Ideas are a dime a dozen. You can have lots of ideas. What makes this idea special is you telling it.
Right. And as an editor, if there's a twist, I've had people pitch me longer things. It doesn't happen very often, but it does happen. As an editor, if there's a twist 2/3 of the way through your 65,000-word story, I don't need to find out about that twist by reading your 65,000-word story. I need to know about that twist before I read 500 words. So you need to make sure that I know that twist if it's important to your story. So I need to know about that family. You know, you're not writing jacket. You're not writing jacket copy. You're not writing what your audience is going to pick up and look at. That's a different sort of pitch, I think, and you've got a little more freedom in there. But
you don't even write that. Your editor does.
Right. Unless you're silly enough to self-publish like I am. So if you've got a twist and you're pitching it to an editor or, you know, an agent or whoever, they need to know that twist. They might need to know how it ends, too, so that they know that you actually have an ending in mind and might have written it.
I have this. They discover a secret. The result is not what they expected. You know, things are not what they seem to be. All those phrases mean that you're going to pick off some editor somewhere, because they're going to read that and they're going to say, I'm not reading your book. I need to know what this is about right now. And I mean, this is what I said before. You've got to somehow make that editor feel like they've read your book, that they have gone through page 1,000, they've closed it, they thought about it for a couple of weeks, and now they sat down and they are deciding if they want to take that your book or not. So you've got to make them feel like they've read it, and that means you're giving away the juiciest part of your story.
I just didn't know. At first, I had a very plot-driven pitch,
mm-hmm.
and I believe there was character drama in there. And
I mean, that's the secret: is the balancing the character drama and the plot. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's hard. I'm not saying it's easy. Mm-hmm. Doing this stuff is going to require you to go over it and over it and over it again. I mean, it's. I wish there was a magic formula as opposed to just a structure. And it is hard to find that balance between character and plot. But it goes back to your goal, and it goes back to your why. And it's like, what is interesting to me most about this? And because you want what's most interesting about the story to you to be what's the most interesting thing about the story to the person you're pitching to your editor, so that they are like, I am interested in the exact same way you are. So that way, when they get the full manuscript, if they say yes, and they look at it, and they'll be like, all right, I want you to change everything, because I really thought you were talking about this story. Or, now that I look at the manuscript, I don't like it at all, because I was under the impression it was something else. You want to get them right on your page immediately. And that's a tough thing to do. But you can.
Yeah. I'm actually so... I forgot your name with the... You're doing this proposal.
Oh, yeah.
I'm so glad you're in here, because imagine he gave this proposal. There's a problem with, you know, adoptions. And there's a solution that you won't expect.
Great. Hey, that's great. That's great.
How ticked off would the people you're talking to be?
Read my paper.
My 85,000 word paper. Yeah.
If you want to find the secret.
Yeah, and that's a very good point. So, moving on.
Good morning, I'm Connor. Urban fantasy dominates the fantasy book market, but I think it's time for the market to shift back closer to fantasy truths and moral landscapes. The whole company is came out of Pennsylvania and imported hundreds of thousands of foreign workers to rip the coal from the ground, and the company took their profits and left, leaving the immigrants to eke out a living in a land of deserts, poison creeks, pits, rocks, and crumbling industrial buildings. In this blighted landscape, mismatched heroes learn to use their magical powers when they band together to battle an invasion of fairies and conquer the world. The Strip is a 100,000-word rural fantasy novel that has Ray and Take the urban fantasy feel in a place they've never gone before, abandoned strip mines in Appalachia.
It's I like the...
The idea of rural fantasy is great. Like, I like suburban fantasy. It's a nice...
Yeah, I like the how, I like the what, the why. The why sounds like I'm going to change urban fantasy. That's not about your story. That's your story is about, I don't know, maybe corporate strip mining is, or the corporate abuse of the planet or whatever is evil, nasty, and must be stopped.
I hate to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. It was kind of boring. It told me nothing about the book, other than its rural setting. I don't know who the main character is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what they want. I don't know what challenge they're going to face, other than there will be an antagonist in the form of fairies. What do the fairies want? I don't know. I don't know anything other than it is a rural setting, which I like. But what's going on in the book? What happens in the book? Who's the main character? There's four. Who is the main character? Give me a name.
Well, is the character or the characters the center,
Catherine?
Or the setting the center?
Well, it is kind of both. I mean, the setting is very, very important. And the characters either have a very odd power or they.
What are the powers they have?
Well,
you're being very vague, and I'm not sure why. Are you afraid that we're going to say they're stupid ideas?
No.
We're going to steal them. Right? I got the laptop right here. I'm ready.
I've come to many pitch sessions, and they've always been saying, do one sentence, you know, compare your book to this movie or that movie, whatever, that kind of thing. So I'm really having a hard time understanding the process. I'm not saying it's anything wrong. I just can't.
All right. We'll talk to you about you specifically. All right.
Yeah, just to say this again, the process is education. The process is educating the person on the other end about your story. I mean, and so far we've heard some great stories in here. I mean, once we drilled, and even fairies fighting humans in a rural environment for the sins of corporations that have long left the rural environment to crumble.
That's compelling.
And that's really interesting. And we've had a whole bunch of very interesting stories. And yes, everyone says make it short, make it sweet, make it to the point. And that is important because people's time is important. But I need to know what the story is about because your story is good. And your story will stand on its own if I understand it.
Yeah.
I would like to say something. Because in your beginning, it kind of sounded like you were putting down, not that you intended to do this at all, but it kind of sounded like you were putting down urban fantasy a little bit. And like urban fantasy, haven't we all heard it all? Ugh, it's so popular. It's what everyone is buying. Let's not do that at all. I mean, it kind of came across that way, rather than, like, you know, the things that you're addressing about, like,
the natural setting and finding the natural setting. And, like, right now, that is such a hot topic. Like, everybody's talking about natural gas. It's, like, on the radio every day. And, like, these companies mining, should we let them mine? Shouldn't we let them mine? What are the costs associated? People lighting their, you know, water on fire. It's, like, such a hot topic right now. And people are very interested in it. And, like, communities are very touched by it. I guess rather than saying, like, urban fantasy, well, I guess if I were you, I'd be like, everybody is talking about this. It's affecting so many people right now. What a great metaphor to talk about, you know, in like a fantasy setting. How can we like let people hear this really cool message that's affecting so many people?
Yeah. Again, I heard the same thing you heard. I heard it slightly different. I heard someone making an excuse for not writing an urban fantasy. you're coming up. I'm really sorry that I didn't write an urban fantasy. I hope you find this story almost as good. And your story is good, and it's good on its own. It's good in a vacuum. And I want to say this to you because I heard this and I'm like, I hear bits and pieces in here that I'm really excited about. And so you've got a good story on your hand.
Yeah.
And you've got to be really proud of that. And you've got to come in here and say, my story is awesome. Here's what's awesome about it. And when, so.
Also, you're going to be taking this to an editor who probably publishes urban fantasy.
Yeah.
And so the first thing you want to have him say is like, unlike urban fantasy, it's like, well, I sell urban fantasy. It's our biggest seller. Why would I want to not sell that?
Yeah, and your story is not about your stance on urban fantasy. Yeah. So.
I have been struggling with the why.
Why do you want to write it?
Yeah, why did you write it?
Because urban fantasy sucks.
No.
Okay.
Right.
What?
Why do I like it? Well, I grew up in that area.
No. What? Got
no, that's important.
Yeah.
As someone who grew up in a rural area as well, that's important. It's like, I grew up in a rural area. That, and so the fantastic in that setting speaks to me. Mm-hmm. Like, that is a powerful why. And more powerful than, like, I don't identify with urban fantasy. To say that, like, as someone who grew up rurally, I feel like there's stories to be told there. Mm-hmm. That's powerful.
If I started with, I grew up in, and described the area, and then say that it was always a magical place.
Ooh.
Ew.
Wonderful!
Yeah. Oh, yeah!
Because not only are you expressing why you want to write this story, you are instantly connecting the idea of the story with you personally. So when the editor goes away, he remembers your story and is like, oh yeah, and that guy grew up rurally, so he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah. No.
Like if you were doing a fantasy story about drag queens, and you're like, but I don't do drag myself, but I have this great story about drag queens. No one's going to go with that. But if you're like, I do drag every night, and that's why I have this great drag queen story, they'll remember that. And so tying that to your own experience is good.
Yeah, if you can, in your why, talk about the magic that you experienced growing up in a rural environment, and if you can do that quickly, I mean, yet again,
that's the tough one.
I want to.
Yeah, and it's hard.
Because
it's hard.
Because you love this urban, this environment so much. It's very easy to stray into long prose about lazy summer. But if you can, in a sentence or two, talk about growing up and the magic you found there and how you want to express this in this book, and then you go to how you're going to express the magic that you found there, now we're actually getting to the book. And right. You're going to say, so how do you integrate your growing up in this suburban air environment? Tell me right now, how do you your growing up into this book? How is it integrated?
Most of that had to do with the setting and like immigrants who live there.
Immigrants from where?
Primarily Ireland.
So Irish immigrants in Pennsylvania working in the coal mines. I mean, these specifics are important. I think the problem with the pitch is it was not specific. It was not specific to you. It was not specific to your book. And I think if you want it to succeed, like we were talking with Hughes, it has to be about what makes it interesting from your point of view.
Yeah.
And don't be afraid to be specific and be like, this is about the Polish people in Pennsylvania coal mines. Like, because that might be, it's like, we don't have a book about Polish people in Pennsylvania coal mines. We have one about Irish people, but not Polish. Let's get that market. That's important.
No, I'm loving this more and more. How you're,
this is a great concept, but you didn't give us enough.
It's like we're mining.
So you've got the Polish people in the coal mines, and that's how you're going to bring it in. This book is going to deal with a Polish immigrants in the coal mines and show how that affects it in the rural environment. Okay, now.
You're dealing with the aftermath.
What's the coolest part of your book? The part where we're gonna go? Wow.
What's the anthropomorphic turtle in your book?
Well, pretty much that the script is actually a magical place. The people live in a patch town. Essentially, when the coal mines came in, they would build really crappy little house and bring in the immigrants and pay them almost nothing and all that kind of stuff. So the town is actually surrounded on three sides by the strippers, what they call them. And anytime you go into the strippers, you may have a magical encounter.
I'm going to interrupt you though, and this is all great. What is the coolest scene in your book? Moment. I mean, just the part where we read the book and we go, wow, that changed everything.
Well, I will say that if you go into the surface on the correct trail at the correct time and you take only the right-hand turn...
We're not in your book. Who is in your book? Does one of your characters go into the stripping at the correct time?
All the points of character.
All right.
And they then end up visiting an old lady who has three different personalities, one for each culture, who puts them on the path of to solve their problem.
What is the
problem? How do they solve the problem?
All right, we'll talk with you later, because it sounds like
there's a lot
of good information in there, and it needs to sort out. But I want to make sure we get everybody in. So, but the one thing for you to take away is, stop being so vague. Stop, like, tell us what happens. What is going on? Be personal. Details. These are important. If you're just going to be vague, then we're just going to walk away because we have no idea about what you're trying to pitch. So, you, sir.
I'll give you a choice.
Stand up.
No, I'll give you a choice. fiction or non-fiction?
You pick.
You pick.
Yeah, this is your
pitch.
We're
giving you a choice.
Yeah, which one do you want to work on?
Ten and five more.
Fiction.
Excellent choice. You nailed it.
I'm Kevin Crosby, and I like to explore the mystery in an extreme situation. A situation where a criminal investigator is sent on a dead-end mission to a dead-end space station to look at a specific incident that happened. The incident leads to the potential for a saboteur who lives on the ship. To survive, he has to find a saboteur. If he survives,
I cannot believe you said this to us after we just yelled at him for being so vague. I mean, no, we're going to talk about this one because you chose it, and it's good. But you talked about situations and things that may happen and all this stuff, and you didn't even tell us why. You were very vague about that. You were like, I am interested in things that may happen in certain existence. Let's say it again and tell us what happens. No qualifiers.
Whoa. Where do you want me to start?
I want you to start with your name, and then I want you to tell me why, and then how, and then
what?
And then what?
Okay. My name is Kevin Crosby.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to discuss a mystery within an extreme environment.
What extreme environment?
space.
All right, a mystery in space. This is good. Extreme environment could be a building on fire.
The extreme environment of space.
The one thing I do want to say, these extreme, are these conditions in terms of emotional conditions, or are we talking about setting? Because it could be either one works.
It's the extreme physical conditions and then the psychological stresses that come from that and put into the view. So there's a situation where it's already a very big problem.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's going to blow shit up between your ass.
See, and this is the first time you said it.
If they blow it up, and it's not just like a little thing. It's not like you walk around the streets and you can just run away from whatever they're running away from.
Right.
If they blow it up, everything goes.
Mm-hmm. Blowing shit up in space is awesome.
The station goes with it, and on top of that, the implications are they're upgrading the station to have a wider net, and if that happens, the station will not be able to see or the powers that be from the government. And there's something happening over here that no one wants to know about. Mm-hmm. So now they have something to set to tour, and now they're going to be sending some money to start messing around with stuff, and because of the extreme environment, it's a little bit of a mess up.
No, all right. Good. See, that's there's some really good stuff in there.
Better.
Better. We're still going back to the why, okay. One bit at a time. So your why is that you say your why again as you define it.
I wanted to explore a mystery within an extreme environmental space.
Okay. What are you saying about the extreme environment space? Because it's a space station, and it seems from what you're talking about that the interesting extreme part is that it's an enclosed, separated space, and that you can't leave, like you said, because then there's just space out there. So, is the interesting bit the isolation?
Yes.
All right.
That's what I really want, the isolation of having cut it off from everywhere else. And in some ways, you can probably move it around. That's why I didn't say this. You can move around to underwater. You can move around to an island. You can move to the desert.
Mm-hmm.
It's the isolation, it's the extremes. You have to stay put. You have to deal with situations right there. You can't run away.
And what do you want to say about that? That brings out the best in people? That brings out the worst? That's a great thing because you can do that? Or is like, when you're in an enclosed space, everything goes to hell? I mean, what are you saying?
I want to say that it's going to, that it could go to hell, but the pressure brings the messy, filthy part of the two diamonds of what you come through with.
Okay.
All right, see, that's your why, right there. It's like, in this enclosed space, in this extreme environment, it brings out both the best in people and allows the diamonds to form from the cult. That's your why. Moving on to how. Say your how again.
A criminal investigator sent a dead initial to the dead space.
Mm-hmm. What is the critical incident?
What's the incident?
The critical incident is that power cord has been compromised.
There you go.
That's right. Yeah.
An investigator sent to a station with a compromised power cord.
I mean, we're there. So I think you're getting it. I want to get to the young lady in the end before we run out of time. Because I think you have a really strong idea.
It's
the details are so important. Because otherwise, what you're giving us is just a mess. And we're like, well, that left no impression because I had no idea what was going on. But I think you have a really strong idea, and it's just a matter of taking out those, like, and something happens, and being like, the power core fails.
Okay. Thank you.
Last one.
No pressure.
Yeah, you've had the most to work on this, so.
So, it better be perfect now.
Should be a diamond that has been made out of.
Well, my name is Kelly Campbell, and I think a major part of coming of age is conflict between one group ourselves to a parent community, while, on the other hand, projecting the values we don't agree with. Born the runt of a powerful demon. Human-human hybrid race. My character must struggle to take certain into the noble caste and gain the approval of her father, who is a supreme monarch. But eventually, she comes to challenge the way people treat the even smaller, weaker, full humans, and face the fact that her father might pose the great stages in the world.
How?
How? Oh, well.
Yeah.
He is, instead, he would overturn the political structure and,
Now, how does she oppose him?
How does she oppose him?
Yeah. Does she, like, raise an army? Does she just write a strongly worded letter? Oh, well, that's important.
Yeah. For a second, I thought we were talking the West Wing.
Oh, okay.
And what's her name?
Yeah. I mean, two things, and I mean, we talked about this over and again. Give away the ending. It's not going to ruin it for us. I mean, that's the ending is. If you wrote the story right, the ending is the coolest part of the book. And the coolest part of the book is what you want your editor to hear. The coolest part. The second thing, and a lot of people have been doing this, so I do want to point this out, you don't have to say, I think.
Right.
It is. There is. When you're doing a pitch, there is no vagueness. There is no doubt. This is the greatest book because it deals with this most important issue in this way, you know, and you don't have to say, I think. You don't have to be shy. You can be...
Well, I mean, they're doing that because I said to do that at the beginning to organize their thoughts. I think you're being...
No, I'm not being... I just wanted to point that out because I disagreed with you, not with her.
Right. Well, and I said that to help you organize the why. You don't have to put the I think. You don't have to put the I believe. It's corny. I realize that. And it does, like you said... change what you're saying, but it does help you organize the why, and it's like, why is that up there? It's because I think of this. And that's why. You could have said that earlier.
I could have.
You just sat on that for like 2 hours.
Because I wanted to end on a strong point.
But I do like that you were specific, and you had those ideas, and I think saying more about what happened, she raises an army... You know, why do they follow this girl who's a teenager and those kind of things? Does she have a magnetic personality? Does she have magical powers? I mean, these kind of details are important because that tells what kind of story it is, and it moves it, like you said, from a West Wing kind of talkie drama to an action story where there is war, and that appeals to a different kind of editor and a different kind of publisher, and that's an important detail to have.
One of the common feelings... And, I mean, I've fallen into this as well, is you don't want to give away too much because you're thinking, I want this to be as general as possible so any editor will take it. I don't want to close the door on it. So if I say this is a war story, I might miss out on this other opportunity. And the truth is that you cannot trick the editor. You cannot say...
Well, and you don't want to.
Yeah, you cannot say...
You don't want them to think it's a different story,
you know,
than what
this
you're
is
having.
Harry Potter, and then they get it, and this is a horror novel, and you're like, ha-ha, too late, you got the manuscript, sort of thing. Let me get sued. Yeah. You want to make sure that your story reaches the right people. And so being as specific as possible... It's going to make sure it reaches the right person.
And it goes back to the, you know, you want to do business with people who believe what you believe, who know what you're talking about, not who are just looking for a book, because they can get a book anywhere. You want them to like your book. You want them to fight for your book, because the editor is not the person who says what's published. They're the people who take it to their editorial board, who fight for you. And they take it to the marketing board and they fight for you. And they take it to the editor-in-chief and fight for you. That's why you want them to believe what you believe. That's why you want them on your side from the beginning. Because they don't make the decisions. They are your proxy. And so holding back important information from them means they can do this argument less. They cannot defend you as well as if you had given them this information. And I have been really lucky, and I've used this, and I've had editors fight for me for the last, as far as they could go, and be like, no, we really like this book. And sometimes it came down to the marketing department. It's like, I really like this book too, but we cannot sell it. And that's unfortunate, but that meant that I had an editor who believed in me so much that it went that far, and he argued for the book to go that far.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you really want. The editor is not your competition. He is not going to steal anything from you. She is on your side, and she will fight for you if she believes what you believe. And that's what you want. You want someone who is going to be in your corner.
I have fought for authors in our publication. I mean, so, I mean, yeah, you really do. I am on your side if I believe in your story. So, absolutely.
And I think we're out of time, unless anyone has one final question, and then we'll have some plugs.
Yeah.
Any questions?
Plugs are important.
No? Awesome. Plug. Oh, wait. Yes.
In the back.
How easy is this, everyone did books here, how easy is this to apply to other situations, take the same format? You mentioned that a little bit. What are the apps?
I mean, you and I can talk about this afterwards in greater detail because we are running out of time, but the idea is still sound because it comes down to you want to do business with people who have the same mindset. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it's important to get that mindset down in the very beginning. And then, as Brent was saying, it's also important to show how you're going to get this idea done and have that plan. And sometimes that's the plot of the book, and sometimes that's your budget and how you're going to spend it, and sometimes it's, you know, we're going to clear out this clearing and put farmland in and all this. I mean, that's how you're going to do it. And then what it is important to have everyone on the same base, but that is less important than these two. Because anyone can make a film, anyone can make a book, anyone can build a computer. What is important is why you're building computers, why you're clearing farmland, why you're making a video, and how you're going to do that. And so it does apply to many different kinds of pitches, and we can talk about details afterwards, but basically, if you want someone else to join your project, which is what pitching is all about, and that's joining your project for money, joining your project to fight for you as an editor, joining your project because adoption reform needs to happen, if you want people on your side, they need to understand why you're so interested in this and how you're going to fix things, how you're going to change, how you're going to do what you plan to do. And these two elements are applicable across the board.
It's a structure to convey information.
All right.
So it works.
We got to wrap it up. Yeah. So I think we're good.
Yep.
Paulette's got to do her book launch, so we got to get out of here. But we'll all be in the